Okay, warm welcome to this first in a new series of our AMBS Original Thinking podcasts for 2023, which I'm delighted to say we're also filming for the first time. I'm Jim Pendrell, I'm Research Communications Lead here at the school. So advances in data, AI, analytics are really changing the way we think about and do business. And here at AMBS, we're delighted to be at the forefront of business technology and research and application. And we are proud to be amongst the leading voices across this rapidly evolving area of business and management. Let me first of all introduce my guest today, who will be discussing the themes of AI. We have Richard Almendinger, who is a professor of applied artificial intelligence here at AMBS, and he's also a fellow of the Alan Turing Institute. And to my right is David Walters, who works in the equity team at River Capital as a technology investment director, supporting technology businesses across the region. He's been a CTO at multiple PE-backed companies and also has run AI practices. So welcome to you both. Now, the reason for inviting Richard and David here today is that Richard was recently appointed to the advisory board of the North's first dedicated AI fund, the Enterprise Investment Scheme Fund, which is run by Northwest-based fund manager River Capital, will focus specifically on early-stage, high-growth AI, machine learning, and data science investment opportunities across the north of the UK. Now, River Capital say that data science SMEs across the region are underserved by venture capital, despite this region containing multiple centres of AI excellence. So with the UK AI market forecast to grow significantly, the fund will present a major opportunity for investors looking to capitalise on this untapped potential. So without any further ado, let's talk a little bit more about our guest today and AI. First of all, perhaps just a little bit about both of your careers and backgrounds. David, do you want to start? Just tell a little bit about yourself.
Sure, thanks, Jim. So I'm, as you say, I'm a technologist actually at heart. I've been a CTO for perhaps 20 years, working for a range of different companies across lots of different sectors. And throughout all of my kind of CTO career, what I kind of recognized was that placing data at the heart of businesses is an incredible way to improve customer satisfaction or increase sales or to identify improved efficiencies across organizations. I had a couple of successful exits by doing that. So I worked for a number of private equity backed companies who, by placing data at the heart of those organizations, were able to have successful exits. And that got me really interested in the private equity space. So I was the first data director in the UK when I was working at North Edge Capital, helping their portfolio companies to do exactly what I've just kind of described, which is to major on their data assets and create IP. I also ran an AI practice up in Manchester for the fastest growing AI practice in the region. And for the last 3 years, I've been working at River Capital. So we're a Liverpool based private equity house. And I run their venture capital arm of the business, which is around fund AI. So and what we're really looking for is high growth, early stage businesses who wish to go on this journey. There's two aspects to the types of companies that we look to invest in. One is either a business which already has an AI platform, computer vision, or you know, perhaps they're working in data science as a service. And the other type of business is companies who have a lot of data already. The management teams recognize the value of that data, and making sure that the management teams recognize that value is an incredibly important aspect. And then they want to go on that journey, and they don't wish to make any mistakes. They want to be able to have experts who can help them to pick the right platforms, understand the right kinds of data science approaches, work out the best tools in kind of machine learning, etc., to actually deploy those solutions.
Thanks, David. Richard, tell us a little bit about.
Thank you, Jim. So thank you also, David, for coming along today. So a bit about myself. So primarily, I've been working really around developing and customizing a broad range of AI algorithms to tackle loads of real-world problems. And often, I've been doing this collaboratively with companies. companies of all sizes and from a range of sectors. I started off doing a PhD in machine learning and optimization, where I was working on drug discovery, for example. We used very sample efficient optimization methods to come up with new drugs that people haven't seen before. These were potent drugs with very low side effects. And then for following on the PhD, I've joined UCL as a postdoc, where I work with big biopharma companies, but also with suppliers of equipment to manufacture drugs. Yeah? And what we were doing there was creating digital twins, so these massive manufacturing processes, and then connecting, again, optimization algorithms to these digital twins in order to come up with processes that are cheap, that are efficient, need very little space, so you need small factories and so on. After my postdoc, I joined finally AMBS. That was, I think, 2015. And when I joined AMBS, I started to branch out. I did much more than energy, than engineering problems. So I started to work with the NHS, for example, helping them to come up with better reimbursement schemes using advanced clustering algorithms. Then I work with the companies like BAE Systems and IBM to again, that is on reinforcement learning methods. Some of these techniques are currently used by the softwares that are out there, like ChatGPT and so on. They rely on these sort of methods. And I've also worked in niche areas, for example, with forensics companies, using explainable AI to help them decide whether someone has taken drugs or not. And we also use explainable AI in other domains. But I think some of the more interesting and exciting areas I've been working on include also sports. So working with local football teams, help decide them who to recruit and how to nurture young talents, but also in music for people who can't afford, for example, a music teacher, how would they be able to learn music? So we can use sensory techniques to help them, you know, learn an instrument and so on. But yeah. my current focus is more on applications around environment and energy and so on, things that have a big societal impact.
What's really striking there straight away, Richard, is the broad sector, range of sectors you've been involved with in your academic career, and many of those sectors are those which you wouldn't think AI would be relevant to. This is something we'll come on to a little bit later. David, just talk us a little bit more about the fund. I know you touched on before but why the idea for the fund in the first place, and why the strong focus on the north of England rather than the whole country?
Yeah, so we were running a tech fund called Fund TMT, and what we kept spotting was these big seams of data within lots of tech-enabled businesses, not just tech-enabled actually, but also, you know, sporting companies or music companies. And the sort of common themes of the really interesting businesses that we were seeing were these big seams of data, you know, CRMs stacked with, you know, all sorts of very interesting segments of information, businesses starting to hive that data out into data lakes for kind of future use. So that really kind of got us very interested in the idea that, you know, we wish to be able to support those companies to go on those journeys. In terms of the sort of regional dimension, a lot of venture capital investment is down in the southeast. So there's a big cluster of VCs in London in particular, and also in Cambridge. And our view, having seen lots of very interesting data-rich companies, was, you know, the North's kind of underserved a little bit. I mean, there are clearly investment houses who invest in this space, but none of them are dedicated. And in particular, what we think that we bring is operational experience. So I've run AI practices. I'm a CTO by trade. You know, we brought in people from PKI who have been very kind of operationally focused. And that sort of mixture of operational expertise, being able to spot the challenges within these data-rich businesses, and being able to provide support. Richard's a member of our advisory team. We've got support from the Alder Hey Innovation Lab. We've got SciTech Daresbury in the Hartree Centre helping us out. We've got people who've kind of got go-to-market experience who've sold data businesses. And so, you know, the kind of strap line that we have, and it is genuine, is the AI scene in the north of England is potentially under fish waters for venture capital. It's actually quite difficult getting VCs up to the north, but you know, our kind of hope and expectation is that we can provide some real sort of capital and operational experience for the businesses that we're seeing. And you know, honestly, our kind of pipeline of potential investments is very wide and very deep. Since we've launched, the amount of businesses that have come to us and said, you know, we're really keen to find out more, how can you help us to go on these journeys, has been really pleasing.
Do you have a particular number of businesses in mind that you're going to invest in, or does it depend on how much you put in each, I suppose?
Yeah, so our fund is constantly raising. We expect to be investing in 3 to 5 businesses every year, and we'll also be following our investments. So most invested companies will always need more money if they're doing well or they're not doing well. So you know, we're kind of hoping to be there to help them on those journeys as and when they need more cash. But I would say, we're targeting up to 5 businesses every year.
And Richard, tell us a bit more about your specific role. What are you going to be, actually advising upon, in terms of the fund?
Of course. So my particular role is looking at the AI setup that these companies are having. And so it's looking at what algorithms are under the hood. Are they used correctly? Are they being used also in the correct infrastructure? Would that infrastructure allow them to scale up if it needs to be? But it's also looking, it's much more than looking at the algorithms per se. It's also looking at the data that's coming in, because as we know, garbage in, garbage out. So it all depends on the data. So it's understanding what data is being collected, how it's being collected. Are there any sensitivity issues with the data? Something that, again, with some of the recent developments out there, that has become actually one of the issues. Mm-hmm. And also then, is there any bias in the data when the data is being processed? There might be situations where companies are introducing unknowingly bias into the data when they pre-process it. So and that can actually become a big issue. Yeah. So it's looking at the data, but then also looking at the algorithms themselves. What algorithms are in place? These algorithms that might be in place, they work, which is great. But then it's also understanding, is there scope for improvement? So can we use our state-of-the-art expertise in AI to maybe suggest to the company better algorithms? But then it's more than just suggesting algorithms. It's giving a pathway, a roadmap on how to get there and how to get from the current state to a setup that's making mm-hmm. state-of-the-art algorithms. But in fact, I see my role a bit broader than this even. I want to know how the AI is interacting with the people. I think that's quite important. What decisions are being made using the AI, and how are these decisions are being made? Is the AI just used to automate something, or is the AI supposed to work hand in hand with the workforce? Yeah? Because ultimately, if the company is going to scale up, that becomes a big issue. If the workforce doesn't feel like they're on par with the algorithm or can't work with that, then I think there could be tensions further down the line. And we want to avoid all of that. And in essence, that goes towards responsible innovation.
I think the other thing that you're really going to help us with is just proving out that hypothesis from these companies. So you know, lots of businesses I think we'll see who said, I've got an idea for this fantastically interesting data set. And we need to prove that hypothesis through statistical relevance. And sometimes you apply machine learning and data science to these ideas, and the machine comes back and you've got a slightly different hypothesis that you need to pivot to.
Very true. I think what exactly we do will depend where the company is in their AI journey. Do they have already AI in place, or do they have just a big data set in front of them that they hope to mine better using AI?
Yeah.
So I think it will depend.
Yeah, but what's clear is it goes well beyond perhaps traditional definition of due diligence. It's beyond that, isn't it? It's actually its potential of the AI.
It's a potential,
as you mentioned, interaction with employees as well. Yeah, so it's a different dimension, just a sort of straightforward, if you like, due diligence of a business.
Because it's the way that decisions are being made that matters at the end. Yeah, I mean, at the end, it's often a decision support tool that the AI is. Yeah? It may not replace the human, but it's just a decision support tool. Yeah, so the human has to make, the humans who interact with it may have to make a decision. Do I trust the AI, or do I not trust it? Or, Yeah. And it would be good to understand that process as well, in addition to all the technical bits around AI.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned responsible AI, because just briefly, because this is a really important area, and it's one where there's a lot of debates right now, you know, nationally, globally, about responsible AI. You know, just briefly, Richard, what do you understand by that term, and what does it mean to you?
I mean, to me, responsible innovation AI is really doing the research we do already to get an understanding, knowledge, and value out of the research and the AI methods, but doing it in a responsible fashion so that the outputs of these algorithms are ethically fine, they are not biased, and you don't have unintended consequences. Yeah, that's the main thing really we want to get out of this. But we still want to have all the good bits around research, getting knowledge and so on and value, but we want to do it in a way without offending anyone or having up.
Okay, and why is, you know, AMBS and University of Manchester, you know, a suitable partner for the fund? I mean, does it go beyond just the academic excellence you have? Is it you know, engagement as well? Why is university working with River Capital?
I'm happy you're asking the question, and of course it's not just me. I mean, is the University of Manchester is a massive Russell Group university. It's the biggest single site university in the UK. So we are well known, of course, in the UK and beyond that. And I've just looked at the stats to understand better how many people we have just in the University of Manchester working in the digital space. So it was because we have an initiative called Digital Futures, which is trying to understand the different research we are doing in the digital space and try to map this across applications and methodologies. And it turns out we have more than 1,700 researchers just alone in the university working across 30 disciplines, all in the digital space. I mean, that's a massive pool of talent we can tap into. So there's due diligence that, of course, I do. But if there's something I can do, then because of the size of the university, I'm pretty sure there is somewhere an expert in the university who can help. That's, of course, just the research aspect. But I think the university is famous for doing research with impact. So we have a long history by doing impact in the space of materials, biotechnology, energy, and so on, as well as AI. We are an Alan Turing member. So I mean, AI is ingrained in our DNA. But of course, another big goal or objective of the university is social responsibility. And that's where we differentiate a lot from the other universities in the UK. So we do want to do the research and the teaching while it's being social responsibility. We want to have our research to have an impact on society and the wider ecosystem. Yeah. But and you mentioned rightly, we have a bunch of engagement mechanisms. So we have mechanisms ranging from very short student projects up to commissioned research projects that might go on for multiple years. Also, depending on the speed at which something needs to be done, we can tap into consultancy projects. Yeah. But also we can apply jointly for funding that's being made available by the government, such as knowledge transfer partnerships, smart grants, and so on. So I think when I see my role in this, I'm representing the whole university. Mm. So if I can't deal with something, I know exactly who to go to.
I think that was one of the things that sort of really attracted us to working with the university was it's not just sort of pre-investment diligence that people like Richard can bring, but also potential access to MSc students to help post deal as well. And you know, all of the companies, many of the companies that we're looking at will require data scientists, you know, and it's very often quite a difficult resource to find. So you know, that sort of post deal opportunity to, you know, provide jobs, create a data economy in the north, you know, is really attractive to us. Actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it really strikes to wider ambitions, yeah. I suppose, yeah. In terms of the economy of the north, and you know, these really exciting emerging new businesses.
I mean, you made a good point. Is the pool of talent we have? We have, I mean, the largest number of students compared to any other university in the UK. We have a good number of students doing degrees in AI, artificial intelligence, data science. So I think there's a perfect place actually for businesses, to start a business and scale it up, if you will.
And also some of the visualization tools that you've got, you know, I mean, they're second to none. And,
the facilities, yeah.
In order, you know, to help our companies to tap into some of that very sometimes difficult and expensive technology to kind of utilize is a you know, that's really attractive for our companies.
Okay, let's just talk now a bit more broadly about trends in AI, if you like, want of a better word. You know, and the potential of AI. I mean, we hear everyday stories about AI and, you know, how it's going to sort of take over the world, take over business, if you like. I just wondered, you know, what the main factors that the businesses need to be considering sort of right now in terms of data and AI technology, you know, to be as effective as possible as a business, because they've been bombarded a little bit by information right now. If you take a step back, what are the sort of key things that you think businesses need to sort of be thinking about? Perhaps David.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the whole OpenAI and ChatGPT conversation has really sort of brought this to the fore. And I think, you know, whilst that sort of natural language processing technology is super interesting, I think there's a more sort of general kind of understanding of artificial intelligence and the tools that kind of sit behind it and the people that you need to place behind AI that needs to be kind of understood a bit more. For me, what I've kind of seen over the last, I would say, 3 years is almost a kind of ping pong back and forth between an adoption of some of the cloud-based technologies like AWS, and then a kind of move back to much more sort of people-focused approaches to artificial intelligence. So, you know, like I say, about 3 months, three years ago, there was a big move to the AWS platform. And the AWS platform, or Azure, or some of the Google platforms are fantastic. You know, it's scalable technology, which is totally democratized artificial intelligence. But what is often missed is the data scientists that you need to use, the training of the data sets, the algorithms that you need to test, the data pipelines that you need to create, the ETL systems that you need to put in place. And what I've found when I've kind of run an AI team is that the data scientists, who are the real people that are running these AI programs, they typically gravitate back to much more kind of manual processes. And so whilst ChatGPT is a very glamorous, very interesting, very kind of LinkedIn friendly platform, which is going to have some fundamental kind of applications across the world economy, and we're actually seeing it already in some business that we're investing in, that kind of requirement for data scientists and the data management is, I haven't seen that going away, and I don't particularly see it going away kind of quickly.
Just help us out, David, for those who don't know exactly, you know, what ChatGPT is and how it works, if it's possible to say briefly how it works, and are we going to see many more of its ilk, you know, in months and years to come?
Yeah, I think so. We're already seeing kind of similar platforms coming out from Google and others, and really it's the kind of librarying up of technologies. So rather than kind of designing algorithms from scratch, you know, there's various libraries that you can sort of download for all sorts of different business applications. The way to think about ChatGPT, for me at least, is there's kind of two major applications. One is natural language processing. So you type in a equation, or you type in a business idea, and the OpenAI platforms will go away and they will create unique content, written content. The other aspect of that is something that the creative industries are starting to really embrace, and I think there's some super applications for, which is the graphics OpenAI libraries. And as an example, we are looking at a Liverpool City region based gaming company who are focused on virtual reality. They are using these OpenAI platforms now to create graphics within seconds. You know, they're typing in things like, show me a particular graphical requirement, And those images are coming back within seconds. Now that would normally take a graphics artist perhaps a couple of days to create, and that's speeding through therefore the release of their kind of gaming cycles. But what I feel is there are some very particular applications there which are focused on natural language processing and they're focused on graphics. But as we kind of observe and kind of have kind of knowledge of, the application of artificial intelligence across much wider platforms is, you know, does require a lot more kind of people.
And perhaps one for Richard, you know, how AI technology would evolve in the years to come. There's an open question. How do you see almost the future?
I mean, all the techniques or new AI technology that David just mentioned on ChatGPT and DALL-E 2 and so on, that takes a bit of text and then generates an output, a visual output. These ones are great, but they all have flaws. Yeah, I mean, they all have limitations, and the model is only as good as the data you give it to train. So for example, you want to have a picture of a flight attendee. If the data you're using to train the engine has only female flight attendees, then the output will be a visual of a female flight attendee rather than a male. So actually it enforces potentially, you know, stereotypes, and there could be discriminations and ethical issues in some of these outputs. So you have to be careful, but also where is the data coming from? There are potential issues around the data that's being used to train these models. Is the company allowed to use the data to train the model? Did they get consent from the different providers or not? So there are issues that need to be that one need to ask when using these technologies. But I think this is where we're going to see, I mean, the trend. I mean, OpenAI has a number of these tools in the pipeline and haven't been released yet, and Google as well. And I think is an exciting space to be in now. But for businesses, they need to make a judgment on, is this a tool I can use? For what can I use it? What are the risks associated with it? They need to make a judgment on if they want to use these tools and understand the risks. And if you're a manager, you may not know these risks. You need potentially someone more technical.
Wait, so talking about risk, sorry, David, you obviously know, I asked you there about regulation. At least, you know, to what extent, you know, I guess governments sort of are aware of these kind of issues. Is it still in its infancy? You know, we talk about responsible AI, the ethical issues which will come up inevitably, bias issues. You know, are we going to see gradually a bit more regulation coming through to support everybody, to support businesses?
I hope so, because I mean, these sort of questions, they've been coming up recently more and more. So, for example, with OpenAI, with some of the applications, it's not clear. Is OpenAI to blame if something goes wrong, or is the user to blame who uses the software? So it's not a clear-cut decision, and I think, we need some intervention from the government and set at least a structure around who is to blame. But I think at the end of the day, everyone has to be responsible. It has to be the developers of these methods have to be responsible and think about risks and spell them out so that the users can read through them, and maybe it's up to them at the end to decide, do I want to take the risk or not?
Well, the university lecturers are going to probably be one of the first people to kind of think carefully about this, as the first MSc paper generated by OpenAI came out, was published today. And I think it got a B or a B minus or something.
Indeed, I mean, I've seen tests where ChatGPT was able to pass an exam. Quite a difficult one that, and with marks well beyond what a human could do. But on the other hand, you can use ChatGPT maybe to ask it, is this assessment faked or not?
We joke a little bit, but it's not. It's actually serious, isn't it?
It's serious. It's very serious.
These are precisely the kinds of things which I'm guessing people are looking at right now.
And you're right. It's about the abuse of the technology, because there's so many different applications. I mean, you know, there's a for example, supporting the National Health Service, who have a move now to much more kind of online chat-based first-pass triaging of healthcare. You know, being able to use ChatGPT to go and find, you know, very precise solutions to chat questions. You can, you know, that's a fantastic application. Mm-hmm. But students cheating with their kind of MSc dissertation deliveries is a kind of a
it's horrible, yeah. So,
but I mean, most technologies go through these phases. Yeah. You know, there's a wave of settling into how does society start to use this technology.
Yes, bring perhaps broadly to perhaps a final area of discuss, which is support for businesses in this whole area and how, where they're going to get information support from. It brings us rather neatly to a new course, actually, which we're launching here at the school later this year around AI for business leaders, basically. But I mean, what more needs to happen? I mean, are we talking about a wider ecosystem needs to develop further to help businesses guide them along this journey, because it's a complex journey? I mean, what do you think, David? Do you think are we gonna what needs to happen, I guess, to sort of make the sector
grow? Well, I mean, I think Manchester's a great example of how the ecosystems often create themselves. So the kind of tech scene in Manchester has fantastic meetup facilities. It's got great interactions with the university, and I think I'm a great believer that kind of organic ecosystems do sort of evolve and create themselves. For me, as an investor in businesses, there is a great need for the non-tech businesses who wish to go on these journeys to get a lot of support. That's exactly what we're trying to do with the University of Manchester is to make people like Richard and his teams available to companies to not make the mistakes, because you can waste a lot of money and a lot of time and put your businesses at risk by going down a journey that you're potentially not qualified to go down. So just trying to sort of corral together ecosystems of people who can kind of support those businesses. And the other thing to say is that there are companies who are data science as a service companies, or they're ML ops as a service companies, and they are often the best first way to put the flesh on the skeleton of the AI business that you're trying to create, because again, you can waste time, money, energy, put your businesses at risk by going down those kind of wrong channels sometimes.
So Richard, just tell us a little bit more about this new course for business leaders, which we're launching, because it's called Data and AI for Leaders. It's a 4-day course. People are going to come into the school here and almost like a workshop for 4 days. What can you teach in four days to a business leader to make them understand better?
So the entire purpose of this module is really that we understood there is a disconnect between the leaders, the managers of a company, and the techies in the company. They don't speak the same language. Yeah. So how do we close that gap, and how do we get the same company at least how do we get them in a position where they can understand each other? Yeah, and maybe the leader can understand. For example, one of the techies gives the leader a report with some graphs and so on. Ideally, we want the leader to look at this and think immediately about, oh, did you think about bias? Did you think about maybe about this issue and that issue? Yeah, that we want the leader to scrutinize these reports and whatever the techies are saying. Yeah, so this module is a 4-day module, as you said. Yeah, 4-day module. It will run twice a year. And what we want to do in this module is to give there are really 3 goals we're trying to achieve here. Give an overview of the AI landscape, of some of the key algorithms out there. Understand, we want the users to understand what's happening. How do you get from a data set to an output here using this AI engine? What's the process behind pre-processing the data, collecting the data, running it through the algorithm, and then you get the outputs out? What we don't want to do is we don't want to teach the participants how to code. Leaders typically wouldn't code. It's not their job. If they wanted to code, we would point them to alternative modules where. But in 4 days, you can't teach someone how to code. So we will be using pre-made modules that we have, and we'll let the leaders play with them around. They can change some of the parameters, rerun these modules, and see what the output gets them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we also want to teach the participants responsible innovation. So it's as you said, we want them to understand issues around ethics, around legal issues, and so on. And we want them to understand the typical drawbacks that some of these algorithms have, such as bias in the output. Yeah, I mean, as I said, the output is only as good as the data you're using to train these models. Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that, which is that gap between the leadership team and and because the leadership team will have a hypothesis, let's sell more, let's delight our customers more. But the complexities of bias and ethics that come with that back from the techies, is that's a really kind of difficult gap to plug sometimes. So, I mean, education and courses, feel like the right approach.
Yeah, and some of these issues around ethics and legal issues, and so they have become more prevalent in the recent years, maybe more so. So I think we need to educate, in essence, some stuff from the people around that.
Well, I think that's probably a very opportune point to end, but it's been a fascinating conversation. My thanks to both of you for giving us your thoughts on what's a complex area, fast emerging, a lot going on, exciting, but also with its own challenges. So it's been really nice to hear you both talk about it. And we'll have to reconvene another day to sort of see how the landscape's changing. Yeah, but thank you both.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. We hope you found this episode insightful. For a list of our latest webinars, news, and useful business content, please visit ambs.ac.uk.